scumbaggery is scumbaggery, and it must be exposed. No matter who it is, it doesn't matter whether it's your best friend and confidant or your worst enemy. You've got to expose the scumbaggery. I mean, look at it this way. The only reason why any bad thing happens in the entirety of society is because there's a scumbag behind it. Every single time. Invariably. So the reason why it's so important to expose scumbaggery is to prevent bad things from happening. Because it's the cause of all bad things. I don't know why people don't get this. You know? They try to dismiss it as infighting or whatever. But it's not.
When there are actual documents proving an assertion or proving a theory, when there are actual documents showing you that what you thought was happening is actually going on, it takes it to a whole new level. And it needs to be recognized with that respect, that now you have actual evidence to show that what you thought was happening is actually happening, and you have to deal with it from that perspective on, in light of this evidence proving your theory.
Yeah.
I don't understand why people will agree to that as far as investigative journalism goes.
It's because they appeal to authority. And even journalists say, oh, well, that person's a credible journalist. I'll appeal to them. They must be an authority on something. When the reality is, if you are in a position of power and control and or influence, whether that be a doctor, a lawyer, a politician, a radio host, or a television newscaster, it is very, very likely that that person could quite possibly be a psychopath. All right? Because the reason why I can say this categorically is because I'm quoting from the American Medical Journal, who said that these are the industries which psychopaths cluster in. Okay? How do you define a psychopath? Well, it's a person who's very smiley and happy and friendly when you first meet them, but ultimately doesn't have any long-lasting relationships and doesn't care about anybody other than themselves. Doesn't that sound like almost every employer you've ever had? What's the commonality here? Power and control. Influence. Entourage. They love having an audience. They love manipulating people. They love deceiving. They love committing scumbaggery. It's the only thing that motivates them. And unless they've got power and control over other people, they wouldn't be able to fulfill their desire.
That is a pervading ideology that is seeped into our everyday life. We display as a culture, as a society, psychopathic behaviors toward each other. But there are actually real instances where historically you can see with Hitler, with Stalin, that these people have an ability toward influencing the general population and utilizing crowd psychology and utilizing things that were shown in the Ash conformity study, that people want to be part of a crowd, that people want to belong to something, that they will not go against the crowd, that they have a personal interest invested in the person they look up to. And so if that person that they look up to is corrupt, it becomes a personal identification issue with the audience. And so by putting the audience in that position, they create this strange army of people who will do anything, even if it goes against their morals, ethics, and values.
That's right. I mean, how do you suppose Germans were influenced into instituting a police state on their own people and asking them for papers wherever they go and taking away all of their freedoms? It wasn't because everybody in Germany was a bad person. It was because they were all indoctrinated into crowd psychology, into groupthink, into silo mentality. Right? If you've got an authority figure in a uniform, in a lab coat, or with a microphone, they can get you to do things that you would never do on your own. They can get you to commit crimes. They can get you to commit murder. They can get you to lie through your teeth in defense of them. You know? This is the problem that we're dealing with, is crowd psychology is very, very powerful. This is the reason why shock jocks are so influential. Because people always, always listen to them. If they say something really crazy and outlandish, that's when somebody will start listening to them. Somebody says something that's perfectly reasonable and profound, bugger all people will listen to you. All right? This is the way society has been influenced these days, and it's quite sad to see. I'm just glad that I'm not one of those shock jocks, that I'm not one of these evil, manipulative, psychopathic filth who care nothing about human dignity, who care nothing of respect, who care nothing of patriotism, who are heartless and are followed by the mindless. I'm glad I'm not one of those people. What occurred to me is like, I get attacked quite a bit by people in my position. And I have my listeners who occasionally come round to my place, who I've met at protests and what have you. And what occurred to me is that none of them like me and stick up for me for no good reason, right? They all know precisely why they listen to my show. They all accurately perceive the things that I'm saying. They don't go out and abuse people on my behalf. They don't write hit pieces on people on my behalf, unless that person is actually evil, has actually done wrong. And this is the thing that I feel actually defines me as very, very different from other talk radio show hosts in this field. I mean, number one, I'm from New Zealand. Name me another talk radio show host from New Zealand who's talking about this kind of stuff, you know, in America. It just doesn't happen. It's because I know more about America than the majority of Americans, which is a very sad indictment on the country, I must say. However, the salt of the earth... This is an old movie, and this is something that I think embodies, at a large extent, my audience, because they are the salt of the earth. They are really nice, decent people. Vast majority, I think about 80% of my listeners, according to my YouTube rankings, are between the ages of 40 and 65. Okay, so that means 8 out of 10 of the people who listen to me are roughly twice my age. Have twice my life experience, right? And they've maintained, despite all those decades of public education, propaganda from the media, medical mafia misadventure, they've maintained their own sense of freedom and their own ability to discern truth from fiction. This makes my audience... In my opinion, one of the most intelligent audiences in talk radio, one of the audiences with the most integrity. Every conversation that I have with them, whether it be on Skype or in person or on Facebook or whatever, seeks to only reinforce that fact. And what I tell people is that if I ever become corrupted, if heaven forbid I become some form of douchebag, I wish my audience to be honest enough and have enough integrity to expose me for the scumbag that I have become. For if anybody in a position of influence, such as a radio show, gets to the point where they believe their own BS, then they cease to have value to the so-called truth movement. This is my belief. And once that happens, there really isn't any going back until somebody exposes you. And that's why I would wish to be exposed, if I did start to be some kind of a scumbag. This is why I love to be criticized, because it either gives me an opportunity to sit back and go, oh my God, they're right. I have been doing this wrong, haven't I? Or, even better, it gives me a chance to defend my position and bring some understanding to the person who might be criticizing me without seeing the full spectrum of information that I've used to make my decisions. Putting people on a pedestal, saying that they're above suspicion, saying that they can't be criticized, is the precisely wrong thing to do, particularly in this sphere of influence. Nobody is above reproach. Everybody should be suspect. A suspicious mind is a healthy mind. You can trust somebody, but make sure you trust them based upon sound evidence. If they make a claim and have absolutely zero evidence to back it up, then they're lying or they're misinformed. And if you criticize them and say, well, you made this claim, but you don't have any evidence to back it up, and they block you or start gang stalking you or something, you know that you're not dealing with an honest, decent radio host. You're dealing with a psychopath. Because they don't like criticism. They don't like anybody showing them up for what they are. There's only two things that they fear. Worse psychopaths, who play by just as many rules as they do, i.e. none, or being exposed, being put out to the light of day. But the difficulty here is, if you've got an audience behind you, you've got a veritable army for which to demonize, propagate disinformation, and so on and so forth, against the people who are trying to expose you. And people have an emotional investment in not exposing radio hosts or other individuals that they've put up on a pedestal. And there's a good reason for that, because you spent all that effort, all that emotional investment, pushing somebody up above you onto a pedestal. Once they come crashing down, it's not just them that falls, but it is you as well. Because they fall right onto you, the person who put them up there. All right? Understand that we're all human. Well, some of us anyway. And that we all make mistakes. And if you put somebody on a pedestal, you are setting yourself up to fail. Okay? Every single person that I've ever had max respect for has disappointed me at some point. Really? I'm not kidding. Everybody has done things that I disagree with or feel wrong about or whatever. But if they apologize or change their tune and or continue to do what they say they're going to do, then they're definitely not a psychopath. Psychopaths don't ever apologize for anything. Ever. You know? Seriously, think about this. Have you ever seen anybody attack someone else and then turn out that they're wrong and then never apologize for it or even mention it? That's not a good person. That's not somebody who understands what apologizing and being human is really about.